This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Hello and welcome to the Hope Mornings weekly podcast. I'm Katrina Rowe. This week, Sydney breathed a sigh of relief when missing Bondi schoolgirl Michelle Levy was found safe and sound 2 days after she ran away from home. But why did she run away in the first place? Was it a plea for attention? Dr. Justin Colson from happyfamilies.com.au talks about why kids run away and what parents can learn from it. We catch up with Olympian Libby Trickett, now a health reporter, about the mental health benefits of getting outside in nature. She's an ambassador for Sydney Crows Trek 2015, raising money for the Fred Hollows Foundation. She says even an Olympian has to train to trek 55Ks in 18 hours. YWAM's medical ships are in town, docked at White Bay Cruise Terminal throughout November. Hannah Piat is a registered nurse who's worked on the ships in PNG and shares some of her amazing experiences on board. It's that time of year when the end of year catch-ups and Christmas parties get underway. And while it can be lots of fun, there are also those awkward moments when you have to try to break into a conversation. It can be difficult. We get some tips for minimising the pain, going to the office Christmas party or the other end of year catch-ups. And Ben McKechnie reviews the new Tina Fey movie, This Is Where I Leave You, directed by Sean Levy, who also directed the romantic comedy Date Night, also starring Tina Fey. That is all coming up in the Hope Mornings Weekly podcast. Don't forget you can download it from the Hope 103.2 website or subscribe on iTunes. Just search for Hope Media and select the Hope Mornings Weekly podcast. I'm Katrina Rowe. Thanks for listening. Of course, we were all terribly relieved to discover that Michelle Levy had returned home after being missing for about 48 hours and having 2 nights away from home. But it made me think, you know, nearly all of us probably had a moment when we felt like running away or had a sibling that did for a short time run away. So what's this really all about? Dr. Justin Colson from happyfamilies.com is on the line. Hi, Justin.
Yeah, hi, Katrina.
Yeah, look, we probably all have these memories of these feelings of saying, look, you know, I'm going to pack my bags, I'm going to run away. What's the difference between the kid that kind of thinks that for a moment and the ones that actually do it?
I think that the real difference is that some kids are in situations where they absolutely feel completely helpless, where they feel like they simply don't have any other option. Sometimes they may be doing it as a plea for help. Other times it could be some real attention-seeking behaviour, which I suppose is the same sort of thing. In far too many cases, children run away because of severe neglect or abuse or alcoholism or violence. But other times, kids will run away because they're terribly embarrassed about something, or they'll run away because they're trying to hide something from their parents, especially teenagers. Maybe they're getting involved in some drugs or alcohol or intimacy-related issues that contravene parental values, and they just feel like they can't stand anymore, so they've got to get away. Some kids run away to punish their parents. They say, that's it, I can't stand what my parents have done to me, and I'm going to make them suffer, and I'm going to leave. There are so many reasons for it, but ultimately it comes down to discontent, and usually it comes down to some sort of a plea for help.
Yeah, it seems like in some circumstances that it's the only power that kids have, almost, to sort of hurt their parents or to make them sort of wake up to a situation.
It's interesting that you've used the word power. It's precisely what goes on in far too many of these cases, and that's because too many parents in these cases, whether they're doing it intentionally or not, are using their power to control their children in ways that the children finally rebel against, and because of that growing resentment, they feel powerless unless they take this drastic action.
Because there's sort of a difference, I think, here between what we're talking about, which is a child who, say, like a primary school child who says, well, I'm running away, and they go for half an hour or something, and then they come home. And the serious runaway of perhaps a teenage years or something like that, where the child may be missing, they may go to a boyfriend or to, you know, another family where they might feel safer or more accepted or something like that. How can a parent sort of tell the difference, you know, between is this a serious incident of running away, or is this just a child having a little temper tantrum and they'll be back?
I don't know that there's any telltale signs where we can absolutely know ahead of time what's going to happen. What we've really got to do is do all that we can to help our children feel safe and secure so that they don't feel so powerless and feel that this is the only viable option for them.
So what should we all be learning from this incident, Justin, as parents?
Well, I think, first of all, and without speaking about this specific incident, because it's too hard for us, we don't know all of the details, we don't know what was happening in particular families to cause certain things to happen. Yeah. As a general rule, we need to make sure that when we can see that emotions are getting really, really high, or when children are feeling completely powerless and starting to want to lash out in a way that's going to hurt either them or us, we need to actually just call time out. Sometimes we try to control, particularly our teenagers, far more than they ought to be controlled. And I know that because I've got teenagers myself, and sometimes I want to win every battle. I want to win every discussion. I'm the parent and I want things to be my way. And we've got to step back and recognize that some battles are worth fighting, but most of them probably aren't. That would be my first tip. Don't make everything a power play. The second thing is, when we can see things are getting really nasty, do exactly the opposite to what we feel like doing. Because what we feel like doing is going after our child's, you know, getting really strict and down the line and saying, listen, I'm the parent, it's my way, or you're out. And that's obviously the worst thing we can do. What we actually need to do instead is step back and say, I can see how this discussion is making you feel. You're feeling upset, you're feeling helpless, you're feeling lost, you're feeling like you don't want to be here anymore. And when we say those kinds of things, our children recognize that we're perceiving the world through their eyes, and we actually decrease the emotional craziness. But as we pause and we show that little bit of humility and that little bit of a desire to see what's going on in their world through their eyes, we can take the sting out of the argument, and we can actually reduce the likelihood that they're going to do something crazy. And I think the third thing, the most important thing, no matter what, and again, it doesn't come naturally, is that when things are getting really tense, we again take a step back and actually express our love. Now, this is a really hard thing to do when we're feeling anything but loving, but it's at these points that our kids need it more than anything. So we might say something like, I know we're really struggling with this. I know this is not going well. But no matter what, you're important to me. Yeah. And letting our kids know that we love them no matter what, it might just take that bitterness out of the conversation. And if they do still decide for whatever reason that they're going to hit the road, they go with our words, I love you, you matter to me, ringing in their ears. And you can bet your bottom dollar that with that kind of a conversation going on in their head, they're much more likely to be gone for 48 minutes than 48 hours.
Okay. Thanks, Justin. Thanks for the advice. Yeah, Justin Colson from happyfamilies.com.au. If you've ever experienced the sense of peace that comes about when you're immersed in nature, then you'll know that it can really improve your mood and sense of well-being. But now science has actually proven that there are also incredible mental health benefits to regularly walking in nature. The Sydney Coast Trek is an opportunity to not only enjoy the health benefits of hiking, but also raise money for a good cause, which is the Fred Hollows Foundation. Olympian Libby Trickett is an ambassador for Sydney Coast Trek 2015. Hi, Libby.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Now, you've got a new TV career now, don't you? You're a health and wellbeing reporter these days.
I am, yeah. It's been quite a whirlwind since retirement in July last year. I feel like I'm doing retirement better the second time around.
Okay.
And yeah, I've had some wonderful opportunities presented to me this year. So yeah, one of those is working with the Today Show and being a health and lifestyle reporter for them. So that's been really fun. I mean, that just sort of combines so many of my passions. And
yeah
it's been a really, really great experience.
Well, obviously you would already know a lot about sport and fitness, but you must be also learning a lot just about health in general. And one of the things that a new study has found is that getting out and walking in nature apparently has incredible health benefits. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I have. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. Obviously, one of the reasons that health and fitness is my passion is because, you know, of those sort of mental, emotional benefits that I feel when I exercise. So, you know, the fact that science has now discovered and confirmed what we all thought all along, the fact that getting out, being in fresh air, getting a bit of sunshine, you know, maybe with your friends, just getting out and about really can not only reduce the effects of and the symptoms of depression, but improve your mental well-being and reduce stress as well. And I think that's, I don't think there can be a better outcome than just simply taking a walk outside.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the fringe benefits, I think, of being an Olympian and a gold medalist in particular with a high profile like you do, Libby, is that you can use your powers for good.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all these opportunities, haven't you, to support some great causes. Why are you supporting Sydney Coast Trek?
Well, I mean, obviously there's the whole mental, emotional, physical aspect of being part of Sydney Coast Trek. You know, the idea of setting a goal for me is really important in part, as part of my health and fitness routine. So, you know, setting a goal to walk 55 kilometres is a pretty lofty one for me and for a lot of people out there. But it's to be a part of that fun community, working towards something and getting fit along the way is wonderful. But all of that happens, all of that fun and fitness and friendship happens while you are fundraising for the Fred Hollows Foundation. And I think, you know, they do such amazing work and have done for so many years. And to try and help people gain their sight back is something that I'm very happy to be part of and really support as well.
Mm. Have you actually done this before, Libby, this walk?
No, I haven't. I've done fun runs.
Okay.
I've done, you know, a 10K fun run. Oh, I've done the City to Surf.
Mm, I did that too, but I had to walk most of it.
Yeah, look, that's hard work. I was really happy because I jogged the whole way, so that was a big goal for me. 14 kilometres is a really long way. So add a couple more on top of that. It's going to be interesting, but I'm really excited by the challenge, and I've got a great team. I'm part of the team, Adam Spencer, Angela Mollard and Magdalena Rose, and we're walking from Coogee to Balmoral Beach. So it's going to be really, really fun.
I would have thought for someone like you with four Olympic gold medals, this would be a total cinch, but do you still have to train?
Totally, yeah, 100%. It's funny because a lot of people have said that. They'll be like, oh, you'll be able to do it, it'll be fine. But, you know, it still is quite completely out of my comfort zone, to be honest, because I was a sprinter in what I did. So nothing over 200 metres was what I raced. So 200 metres to 55 kilometres is a fair change, but I think for me, physically I'm able to push myself and train and that isn't going to worry me. I don't think the physical side of things will be too much of an issue for me. It's the mental side, you know, having to push through those barriers and, you know, feeling like you might need to give up and pushing on and persevering throughout it, because, you know, and that's why it's done as part of teams. You know, you're in a team of four, you're there to support one another every step of the way, literally, and you know, it's going to be such a wonderful event in March next year.
All right.
It is primarily aimed at women, and I think to show the strength of your character and what your body is physically capable of, I think it'd be wonderful for women to sign up and see what they're able to achieve.
Okay, well, it sounds like now is a great time to sign up, and you can register now at coasttrek.com. Thank you so much, Libby, for getting us fired up and enthusiastic about it.
My absolute pleasure. I hope everyone signs up. It'll be an amazing event.
Yeah, okay. That's Olympian Libby Trickett talking about her involvement with Sydney Coast Trek, and it's raising money for the Fred Hollows Foundation. The event takes place next year on Friday, March 6th, so now is a good time to register and get training. It's all online at coasttrek.com. You're listening to the Hope Mornings Weekly Podcast with Katrina Rowe. If you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe on iTunes to enjoy a new episode in your inbox every Friday afternoon. Still to come, we catch up with Joanna Hayes from Celebrate in the City about party etiquette and making it as pleasant as possible for everyone. And Ben McKechnie reviews the new Tina Fey movie, This Is Where I Leave You. Well, while we're all panicking about possible cases of Ebola, over the water in PNG, there is a genuine health crisis going on. 1 in 13 children still die before the age of 5. Someone dies from TB every 2 hours, and 94% of people live in malaria-affected areas. YWAM have been trying to address some of these challenges with their medical ship, MV Pacific Link, but after 35 years, it's time for a replacement. The plan is for a new ship, the MV Amari, to take over next year, but to make that happen, YWAM need to raise $5 million by December for a refit. Hannah Pitt is a registered nurse who's worked and travelled with YWAM's medical ships. G'day, Hannah.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good. Now, how did you get involved with YWAM's medical ships?
Well, I'm a nurse, grew up in New Zealand, and really since I was a little girl, all I've wanted to do is work in the developing world offering healthcare. So that led me to YWAM, and I was involved in some of our scouting teams that went out and kind of checked out the land in Papua New Guinea, and then was involved in our initial trip with the ship as well, and have been working up there now since 2006, and I love it.
Why do you love it? What do you find satisfying about it?
Obviously, there's the adventure, which you just can't help but love, to be able to go to the middle of nowhere that not even like the Lonely Planet guide knows about is just so exciting. But just the people always is just unbelievable. They have very, very little. Their healthcare is awful, but they just have these amazing smiles and generosity of heart and spirit. And I find myself, no matter how difficult like a healthcare case and how hopeless the case might seem, I always walk away feeling a little bit lighter, just like seeing these guys and how they overcome impossible odds every day.
So what are some of the more common health problems that you would find yourself treating in PNG?
I see, unfortunately, a lot of malaria and then just a lot of simple problems that have got like out of control, like a little skin disease or, you know, a sore which can become a big tropical ulcer, which can lead to really a loss of limb. Not to mention TB, we always hear about that one a lot. I mean, that's a disease that is rampant through there. And then just the maternal health and the child health issues, from malnutrition to, like, you know, these women give birth and they're literally sometimes in fear for their life as they go into their labour. And that's not really the way it should be. So, yeah, just a lot of that kind of stuff as well.
And of all the people that you've had the opportunity to meet and help in this work, has there been a patient that you've been deeply affected by?
Yeah, I would say probably the very first time I, not the very first time, but one of the first times I went to PNG before we started the ship, I met this little boy called Bonnie. And he was 1 month old when we met him, and his mum died in childbirth, and they wasn't quite sure who the father was. And so the village had disowned him, and they didn't really believe that he would be able to live. But a beautiful family decided to take in this child, and when we met him, he was so malnourished. He was only 1.2 kilos at 1 month old, which is just tiny. And then by the end of our time with him and just speaking with the family and the importance of looking after one another and just the importance of life in general, we were able to see this child healthy. And that was, to me, that really just got me... Yeah, it made me so aware of what the need is up there, and it kind of set the tone for the rest of my trips into Papua New Guinea. And I often think about the little Bonnie and his family when I'm in situations, and it helps me remind me what I do, what I do.
It's got goosebumps now. What do you need to do at YWAM as an organisation to get this ship out on the water next year? I mean, are you looking to recruit professionals, or is the main need now just for donations?
Both, actually. Obviously, we need to raise $5 million to purchase the ship outright, and we're getting there, which has been exciting, but really need to see breakthrough in that, and different corporates would love for you guys to get involved and offer offer your finances, or perhaps gift in kind, medical companies or marine companies. And then we need, once the ship is out, we need people on it. So we need people to come and volunteer 2 weeks or a short time, and just come on board, and medical, marine professionals, crew members, and just general volunteers as well.
Okay, and what will Sydneysiders experience if they come for a tour of the ship this weekend or next weekend?
Yeah, well, we're docked in Sydney at the moment, and we'd love for people to come on board. We'll show them around, show them where they could potentially be sleeping and where we drive the ship, and where the clinic is going to be all refit out, and just share some videos and share some stories and meet some of the people who work or have been up in Papua New Guinea, and meet some of our friends also who we've helped along the way through story and video. And yeah, so it's really a fun experience for the kids as well. And there's, you know, face painting as well going on. So it's a fun thing to do on the weekend.
All right. Well, thanks for telling us about it, Hannah, and all the best with your fundraising.
No worries. Thank you.
That is Hannah Pitch. She's a registered nurse with YWAM's medical ships. Now, the MV Amari, that's the new boat. It's open to the public at White Bay Cruise Ship Terminal. That's the one down in Balmain. Every weekend between now and November 30, you can head over for a free tour between 1 and 4 every Saturday and Sunday. We are coming well and truly into the season of Christmas parties. I think I have my first one next week. Now, it is a fun time, but let's face it, some parties are also hard work. Walking into a big room full of people who are already immersed in conversation is, for some of us, a slightly frightening experience. It's hard when you know people. It's even harder when you don't know anyone much and you arrive by yourself. Joanna Hayes from Celebrate in the City is on the line to help us all overcome our social phobias and difficulties. Hi, Joanna.
Hi, Katrina. You've pretty much just described my worst nightmare.
I was going to say, tell me I'm not the only one who feels this trepidation when, you know, walking into functions. It can be quite daunting.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Mm. I find it, yeah, very, very difficult.
Well, lately I've found myself at a lot of these sort of cocktail type parties. And I've realised that there just is no way to break in you know, without at some point joining people who are already in conversation. And if they don't let you in, if they don't welcome you in, then you're pretty much out in the cold. So how do we make that whole thing easier?
Yeah, well, it reminds me a bit of when we talked about, like, morning tea at church and how it's just a time where you are allowed to interrupt people. So I think one of the important things is, as a guest at a party, particularly when it's a cocktail-type thing, it's okay for people to interrupt. The whole point is just to be mingling and chatting. Welcome the people into your conversation and remember that you can help make other guests feel calm, even if you're not feeling calm yourself.
Yeah, that's true. Now, Joanne, I've been saying that, you know, I think the one sentence fill-in is a great tactic, just to say, hey, John, this is Andrew. We've just been talking about blah.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, so that they can come up to speed with where you're already at rather than the conversation stalling each time.
Yeah, totally. It's like those awkward moments where you arrive and you interrupt and then it just completely stops. Whatever they were saying, they've just stopped saying. So just include the person, exactly.
Yeah, I had an example of someone doing that really well for me on the weekend where I sat down, they were deep in conversation. I'd been out making coffees and I'd been, like, disappeared for the last 30 minutes and missed the rest of the conversation. And as soon as I sat down, she just oriented her body language towards me a little and then very soon said, oh, Claire was just telling me about blah. And I felt, oh, yes, hallelujah, you know.
That's fantastic, absolutely.
Yeah. And look, another issue I came up against the other day, Joanna, at a party, and I know I'm guilty of this myself in the past, but I was at a 40th with people that my husband used to work with. So I knew pretty much nobody except the host. They were all talking shop.
You can't join in any conversations because you're like, I don't actually work here, so I don't know Zoom firm accounts, and I don't know that big project that you all just finished, and yes.
So do you reckon talking shop should be a no-no at Christmas parties?
I think you should just avoid it as much as possible. You know, there are inevitably moments where it will come up, particularly when it's a work party. But it's sort of the same with other functions, like, say, it's your soccer club's Christmas party. You're going to, out of, I guess, shyness, want to talk about the soccer and not about anything else. But you can prep for that. You know, as you're getting ready for the party, we consider what we're going to wear. We consider how we'd like to arrive. Maybe also think about what might be some topics of conversation you could bring up that have nothing to do with work or soccer or whatever the particular reason is that you only know those people. And it can feel a little bit dorky, but hey, if it makes the process a little bit smoother for you and for other people, then you're going to have a better time at the party. So
that is so true. All right. Any other tips for making it more smooth and comfortable for everyone?
Well, so there's definitely that it is okay to interrupt. It's a party. It's not time for a D&M. So if you're a guest and people are interrupting you, welcome them, introduce them, and, you know, help them catch up on the conversation. Just make that as smooth and easy as possible. Also, one tip I have is take food around. So my mum often does this, like, at church morning tea and that sort of thing, but it's a really easy way to interrupt people if you arrive with food. And so, you know, that can be a great way of just interacting with the party and helping the host and hostess out a little bit as well, because it's really hard when you're hosting a party to try to talk to everyone and do everything at the same time.
Well, that is so true. Because I was at a party Saturday night where a lot of the food, and it was beautiful food, and I was sitting there thinking, oh, my gosh, that must have cost a fortune. But there were all these little mini burgers, and they just sat on this table, and they weren't near where the people were. And so the people were drinking at the bar, and they were getting drunker and drunker because they weren't eating anything, and the food was sitting going cold, and I was like,
right there.
Yeah. So
I think, you know, for me, part of, like, becoming calm at a party is trying to think about, if I was hosting it, what would I want to be doing? And so introducing people and taking them food and making sure they're comfortable and that they've met the people who are sitting around them. So introduce anybody, like, without fail. If you know who the people are, introduce them to each other. They may have met and then forgotten who they are and all that sort of stuff. So that's another tip, definitely. Okay. Just introduce everyone.
Joanna, it sounds like what you're saying is think about other people rather than yourself.
Yes, it's surprising, isn't it, how it always boils down to that.
Yes. Nah, that's good. Thanks, Joanna. Great to catch up with you.
That's a pleasure.
Joanna Hayes from celibateinthecity.net. We've been talking about Christmas party etiquette. So three tips: be welcoming, it's okay to interrupt, don't talk shop, and remember to introduce people. What would you add to that list for how to do it well? 1-300-40-2020.
Hello.
I imagine by now you are well into the excessive facial hair phase of your depression.
It's not a good time, Wendy.
Dad's dead.
What?
Hey, sis.
Mommy. What's different about her?
The boobs. She had a little touch-up.
Your father had one final request, and we are going to honor it.
He just wanted his kids under one roof.
So for the next 7 days, you are all grounded.
Hope 103.2 Mornings with Katrina Rowe.
The Culture Collective.
It's one of the best movies I've seen for ages.
Really fun series, but it's got a great underlying message.
Guaranteed 8 out of 10.
This Is Where I Leave You is the story of four very different siblings who return to the family home for their father's funeral. With a stellar cast, including Tina Fey, Jason Bateman and Jane Fonda, it has the potential to be a very funny movie. It's directed by Sean Levy, who did the Night at the Museum movies, and Date Night, which also stars Tina Fey. Ben McKechnie has been along to see it. Ben, did this live up to expectations?
Katrina... No, it didn't. I should say, look, it's enjoyable. It is funny in parts, as you just mentioned. The cast is excellent, but for my money, no, it wasn't. It wasn't anywhere near as entertaining as I was expecting.
Oh, because I really like Tina Fey. She's one of those people that's really grown on me, and I find her very funny. So
yeah, especially her work in 30 Rock is great. But I really like Date Night that you just mentioned.
Yeah,
Date Night was hilarious. I also really like Jason Bateman a lot.
Yeah.
So possibly my bar is too high.
Okay.
For people that I just expect that they're going to make me cry as soon as I walk into the cinema, but. Look, overall, I think This Is Where I Leave You. It takes a fairly familiar situation in movies, which is bring all the siblings back together. They've got dysfunctional relationships between them and also with their parents, put them in a spot where they're contained, and they have to then deal with issues, personal issues or issues between them, and they all kind of explode over the course of a week. And for me, putting all of that together, it felt a bit... It didn't really get out of being predictable for me, I think that's the big thing going against it. So it's still entertaining, but it just I don't think it, given who's in it and the kind of potential you think it's got, I don't think it really goes there.
All right. Well, I couldn't help thinking, comparing it to The Family Stone, because it's another one of those stories about a dysfunctional family coming all together. And I quite liked that movie, but
does
this film sort of ultimately value family relationships?
It does. And one of the good things about it is the siblings do feel like siblings. Like, I thought the banter and the relationship between them was done really nicely. And yes, it does, and it increasingly does across the movie. So it is a film where, even though people have been estranged and their relationships are terrible, that they, across the whole movie, are trying to actually bring them back together, whether that's within this family unit itself or whether it's within marriages of the siblings that are happening around that also.
Yeah.
So they do hold up family values. That's true. But also, I should point out as well, there's plenty of swearing in this and some sex scenes in this. And like, all among this, you've got unhappy people who often take it out on each other. And the way that they're trying to effectively make their relationships better is they're looking for love, all of them. And I think what they do is they often confuse happiness and love, if that makes sense. So when they're looking for love, they're actually what they think that is happiness. But a big problem that's raised in the movie is really happiness doesn't last.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So this could be a movie that could actually help people think a bit more deeply about their own family relationships and what that love really should and could look like.
Yeah, and look, probably not as much as I hear it sounds like The Family Stone influenced you. Like, it seems like you came away from that really thinking deeply about family relationships and what goes on there. This Is Where I Leave You. Yeah, I don't think it'll be as powerful as some other movies about dysfunctional families, but it definitely left me walking out and thinking about how, and I don't think this is just in this movie, I think plenty of people are like this, that do think to be in love, you've got to be happy. And so, if the other person that you're with and that you love isn't making you happy, then the answer is, well, similar to the title of this movie, This Is Where I Leave You. I've just got to go and find my happiness somewhere else. But it reminds me of, there's some words in the New Testament, in a book in the New Testament called Philippians. Right at the end, there's this little section at the end that talks about the secret of contentment and talks about having contentment in every single situation. And I was thinking about that when I was watching this movie and just thinking, in contrast to happiness, contentment is something that isn't fleeting. Like, you can actually have contentment in every situation in life. It's just finding what the secret is. And according to the New Testament, it's belief in Jesus. But
yeah, the contrast between happiness and contentment for me really came out quite strongly in this movie, so I enjoyed it for that.
Yeah.
But and unfortunately, the movie itself doesn't go down that track.
Yeah.
As far, it doesn't really talk about contentment. It talks far more about happiness.
Okay, and that might be a weak point for it. But it sounds like, okay, an okay movie, but could have been better, could have done a lot better of kind of, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure you've got a long list of movies in your movie-watching history that you get filed under. Yeah, that was pretty good. I think it could have been better. It's kind of somewhere in the middle. It was all right.
Yeah.
This Is Where I Leave You is one of those movies.
Okay. Thanks, Ben.
My pleasure.
That's Ben McKechnie reviewing This Is Where I Leave You. It stars Tina Fey, Jason Bateman, Jane Fonda and Rose Byrne.
Hi. You guys are idiots, but you're my idiots.
Yeah.
I've been chasing this idea about a perfect life. But life is unpredictable and irrational and complicated. And I want a complicated life. I'm just trying to get home.
I left the baby monitor on upstairs.
Oh, there we go. There.
Turn it off.
Turn it up.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.